raise any alarms. I wasn't pleased by that, but I understood her reasoning. What about my sister?
You may consult with Jin if you need assistance, since he's already gotten himself involved, but we can't risk dragging anyone else into this situation. Understood?
Understood.
I considered telling Sarah immediately, in spite of Orton's orders. There was roughly a 0% chance she wasn't going to be dragged into the situation at some point. It was just a matter of when. I should probably do a bit more research before I talk to her, though. At this point, we don't know enough to formulate a plan of action.
I considered my options while I went to verify a few things. Yes, the Academy Guard had been informed that I was going to be under a mock attack the night before. No, they hadn't expected a firearm to be discharged. Fortunately, the bullet hadn't hit anyone. Curtis, the dorm chief, had the same story. Apparently they hadn't heard me screaming for help due to a rune Orton had marked in chalk on the wall outside my room. That was good. Everyone had heard the bullet, though. He'd made it outside to reassure the other students that it was just a drill shortly after Jin and I had fled the scene. He also mentioned that this sort of thing happened occasionally. He'd been a target of a similar attack himself the first year. Apparently it was something of a tradition. Wonderful. I wasn't amused. In fact, I was rather bemused, but at least her story seemed to check out. I even found an unfamiliar rune marked on the outside of my door, presumably the one for dampening noise. I wrote it down so I could look it up later. I left a note for Jin, telling him that I was safe, and then headed to my next class. I'd tell Sarah that everything was okay at dinner, as planned. Hopefully I'd have a better idea of what I was actually willing to tell her by then. I quickly realized that the answer was, not much. Not because I distrusted her, but because of the public setting. If Orton was paranoid enough about the information to teleport me to... Goddess, I didn't even know where or what that place was. In any case, it implied a level of discretion was ideal. I needed security. I'd fill Sarah and Jin in on the very basics, like that I probably wasn't going to be assassinated immediately, and then work on learning the runes for properly warding a room to prevent divination and other forms of observation. Assuming I could even cast them. The rest of the week had markedly fewer attempts on my life. It took a few days to get my ceiling fixed, which was awkward for a time. Fortunately, Jin seemed amused by the situation. I told Patrick, Jin, and Sarah that Orton's assault on my room had been a surprise test. Patrick took this at face value. Jin tilted his head, pressing his lips together against whatever skeptical remark he had lined up. It didn't stop his eyes from rolling. Sarah wasn't that polite. That's a bunch of resh, Corin. I waved a hand dismissively. I might have done a few things to warrant the surprise test, but don't stress over it. I'm pretty sure I passed. Right. She folded her arms across her chest. Feel free to let the rest of us know when you feel like trusting us. I winced. Sarah was right, of course. I needed to show a little trust for my friends if I wanted them to trust me in return. I wanted to tell them all right then, but I'd made a plan and I needed to stick with it. The truth was still buried somewhere, and I'd need to do more digging to find it. Since I wasn't ready to tell Patrick or Sarah everything about what had happened, I waited until later in the day when I had a chance to talk to Jin alone. I knocked on the door to his room. He opened it a few moments later, wearing a quizzical expression.
Ah, Corin.
I gave him my best conspiratorial grin. Want to come with me to do some research on this Karis guy? Jin gave me a considering look, then glanced away.
I suppose it might be more interesting than studying, he told the wall.
We made our way to the library first. It seemed like a logical choice at the time, but the librarian was quick to correct us.
Karis Illyrian, you say? No, I don't think we have any newspaper with articles on him. You can check that trouble in Delanos was about 3 months ago.
Jin looked at her, head tilted.
What do you mean, trouble?
Oh. That isn't what you hear about? He's a heretic. gathered a big crowd and started preaching about how the visages have been lying to everyone. The local guard tried to arrest him, but he escaped.
Well, that's disconcerting.
I stepped a little closer to the librarian's desk. Where could we find out more about him?
Well, the papers are on the second floor near the back, she gestured toward the stairway. But your best bet would be the divinatory. They might have a memory crystal from someone who witnessed the whole thing.
I blinked. Was that possible? I'd heard of memory crystals, but not much about them.
That sounds promising. We'll check the papers first, then head to the divinatory.
We did just that.
It took a couple hours to sift through all the newspapers in the appropriate range of dates the librarian gave us. Everything from about 3 to 5 months back, but we didn't find anything on Karis. That wasn't particularly surprising, though, given that the newspapers tended to focus on local events, political gossip, and occasional advertisements. The most disturbing thing about glancing through the newspapers was the sheer number of articles talking about hostile actions along our border with Edria. Troop movements, weapons, tests, even rumors of Edrian agents found across the border probing for weaknesses.
Could a war with Edria be what Karis was talking about in Delanos?
If so, is he trying to cause a war, prevent one, or something else entirely? I needed to know more.
We headed to the divinatory next. I went straight to the front desk.
Excuse me, we're looking for information on someone named Karis Salirian. Would you happen to have any memory crystals or other information related to him?
The second-year student behind the counter scratched his chin.
Doesn't sound familiar, but I'll go check the archives. Wait here, please.
He returned a few minutes later.
Would you mind telling me why you're looking into this?
Uh-oh.
Research assignment,
Jin replied while I was still thinking. It was a good answer. The student glanced at Jin, frowned, and then looked back to me.
I'm afraid all information on Karis Salirian is currently in the restricted archives. Do you have an authorization slip from your professor?
I shook my head.
No, it must have slipped her mind. I don't suppose you'd be willing to let us take a quick look?
Definitely not. I'm not sure I could get you anything, even if you had an authorization slip. It's in a classified section of the archives beyond my security level. If your teacher wants you to see this, she'd be best off coming here herself and talking to the researcher.
I pondered my reply for a moment.
All right, we'll talk to our teacher. Thanks.
Sure, sorry I couldn't help.
We headed back to my dorm room to discuss things. Jin leaned back against the wall, wearing a thoughtful expression.
Should we ask Auden to go pick this up for us?
I think if she was willing to do that, she probably would have already. I have a feeling this is probably another test.
Jin nodded, seeming to reach a conclusion.
How important is it to you that we succeed at this?
Pretty important. Not only could it provide critical information to help clarify what I've already seen, it could be the type of thing that might help keep me alive. I'd call that a pretty high priority.
He nodded again, raising a hand to his lips.
Do you have some of your civilian clothing? Maybe a scarf or a coat that isn't part of the standard uniform?
I blinked.
Sure?
Show me. I'm going to need to borrow a few things.
You don't have your own civilian clothes?
He shook his head.
I do, but nothing appropriate for what I have in mind.
Well, this should be interesting, at least.
I showed him what I had in my drawers. Jin selected a heavy winter coat, a tall hat, and an ordinary walking cane from my belongings, and then headed up to his room. The coat was a little bit too big for him, but not implausibly so. I did a little bit of reading while I waited, but I was pretty distracted, wondering what in the name of the goddess he was up to. 2 hours later, Jin returned, pulling a glowing green gemstone out of a pocket of my borrowed coat. His face was covered in sweat, and he was clearly out of breath, but lips were curled into a crooked grin. I stared blankly at him.
Is that?
You're going to want to see this. After I leave, put the crystal in your right palm and say, view.
He took a deep breath, wiping off his forehead with his free hand.
You'll be incapacitated for several minutes while you view the memory, so do it somewhere safe.
I nodded.
How did you...
Jin shook his head.
I didn't. You got this on your own. There's an after-hours return slot on the right side of the divinatory. Drop it there late tonight. Don't be seen.
Did Jin just break into the divinatory in a ridiculous disguise and steal that gem from me? This may be the single most amazing thing that has ever happened. I smiled brightly, accepting the gem as he handed it to me. Thanks. I owe you two now? Let me see if there's something I can do to repay you. He gave me a short nod.
I will. I'm leaving now.
Can I have my coat back? He raised a hand, tipped my borrowed hat downward, and focused his eyes on mine.
I suppose, if you insist.
I laughed as he slipped off the coat and hat, setting them down on the bed. He leaned the cane up against the wall. I put the memory crystal down on my bed and opened the door for him to leave. He paused, turning his head toward me as he began to walk out.
Corin?
Yeah?
You should distance yourself from this whole affair as quickly as possible.
I frowned. I'll consider it after I take a look.
Good.
He left with no further discussion, and I closed the door. If I'm going to be out for several minutes, I should make myself comfortable. I sat down on my bed, leaning back against the wall. Maybe I should grab Sarah to watch me while I do this, but then I'd have to explain a lot of things to her. I'm not sure that's a good idea yet. I'll just do this now and talk to Sarah later, if I think it's appropriate. I put the gem into my right palm, propped a pillow behind my neck for support, and moved into a comfortable position. View. My vision faded, replaced with the view of unfamiliar eyes. My surroundings shifted, and with them my perspective. For one dysphoric instant, my mind refused to process the abrupt changes. Height, clarity, my gaze shifting without my control. I adjusted, though the discomfort didn't subside. My new surroundings were unfamiliar, though I recognized elements within it. I was seated on one bench of many in a circular chamber with fine decor on the walls. The most notable from my position were a Valian flag, a white serpent over a crimson hexagon, and tapestries depicting two of the visages, Tengen and Caravas. I tried to turn my head to inspect the rest of the room, but I couldn't. In fact, I couldn't move at all. Should have expected that, I chastised myself. I'm seeing a vision, not living in it. Fortunately, whoever had copied their memories into this crystal turned their head of their own accord a few moments later, giving me a better look at the chamber as a whole. Well, at least I'm not completely stationary. I suppose I'll move whenever this guy did. The place reminded me of a theater or an opera house in structure. I didn't see any private boxes, however. The benches were positioned to overlook a stage-like area about 15 feet below, but instead of stage props, all I could see below were chairs and a speaker's lectern. Is this some sort of lecture hall? That didn't seem quite right. I'd never seen a lecture hall with this kind of circular structure. A judicial hall of some kind, maybe? The seats were nearly all empty, but I saw a handful of people gathered in a cluster to my right. They were far enough away that I couldn't make out all their words, but one of them turned and addressed me directly.
He's coming. Watch this closely. We may need to inspect the details later.
The speaker was an older man with a gray beard and a scar under his left eye. I stood up.
Yes, sir.
The voice that emanated from where I was standing was strong and deep, most likely an adult male.
Should I?
My hand reached down, indicating a saber that was sheathed on my hip. The older man smiled.
We'll take care of that side of things if it comes to it. You just focus on staying safe.
I nodded.
Yes, sir.
The older man turned back to the collection of figures around him as they began to disperse. As the crowd separated, I finally noticed someone I recognized. A woman in her 40s, in an immaculate dueling tunic, her hair raised into a bun, a sheathed saber at her side. My mother, dressed for a fight. She moved to a position on the exact opposite side from where I was standing. My heart lurched in my chest as I processed the fact that I was seeing her for the first time in 5 years, and it wasn't even through my own eyes. Her jaw was set, her expression was grim. Something was bothering her, but she didn't say anything aloud. Where the resh was this? What was I seeing?
there was a rapping sound from below. Someone was knocking on a door to the lower stage area. I stepped forward and glanced down, seeing a door open on the lower level. Two men in the coppery armor of the Soaring Wings Guard stepped in first. Karis Salirian followed them into the room. The guards shut the door behind him. Karis was wearing his mask, but not his long coat or belt. His sword was absent. He was wearing a fairly standard tunic, no knives in the back like the one he'd been wearing in the tower. As far as I could tell, he was unarmed. My vision swam for a moment as shimmering auras flashed into being around the people in the chamber. What the... Oh, these are the memories of a diviner. He's using his attunement to look at the auras of the people in the room. Not a bad idea. A quick glance around the chamber showed me some consistent colors. There were only three visible people remaining in the stands above the room. The older man, my mother, and a brown-haired woman who looked to be in her 20s. All three of them had auras in a similar color range. Yellow, with a hint of green. So they're either citrine or emerald. That's pretty impressive, given that there are only supposed to be a handful of emeralds on the continent. Is my mother really that powerful? I knew she was in the military for years, but... I looked back down at the lower area, observing Karis and the guards. The guards had orange auras, meaning they were Sunstone level, comparable to most of the professors then. Karis didn't have a colored aura at all. Instead, there was a rippling field that distorted the air around him, almost like he was underwater or within a wave of heat. That's disconcerting. The masked swordsman stepped into the center of the chamber, glancing around, and then turning his head toward the older man who I'd spoken to before. "Do I have the honor of addressing Tenjin, the Visage of Insight?" The older man laughed.
"No, I'm not quite that ancient, I'm afraid. I'm Counselor Gerald Lannoy, the Visage's adjutant. This is Counselor Lirin."
He gestured at my mother.
"And Counselor Theus," he waved to the other woman.
Karis scratched his chin.
"Counselors? Meaning members of your Council of Lords?"
"Correct," Counselor Lannoy confirmed.
His tone was paternal.
"I understand that you're not a Valian native, so you might be unfamiliar with our governing process."
The masked man waved to stop him.
"I understand the basics. I must admit to being a bit disappointed, however. I mean no disrespect, but I was informed that I would be meeting with the Visage. Why the change?"
"Regrettably, such a meeting will not be possible," the counselor said. "I'm afraid that our noble allies in Delanos have declared you guilty of heresy and filed for your immediate extradition."
Karis's hands briefly balled into fists, then reopened. This was a trap, then.
Counselor Lannoy sighed. "Not a trap, sir. I read your request for the meeting and approved it personally before the extradition request came to us. I admit to being intrigued by your claims, and were the situation different..."
Karis took a step forward. The guards tensed, moving hands toward weapon hilts, but Counselor Lannoy raised a hand to stop them. Karis leaned back and folded his arms. "The situation can be different.
Let me speak to the Visage before you send me to Delanos. I suspect he would be willing to dispel these claims of heresy personally if he heard my message."
Counselor Theus raised a hand to her forehead, closed her eyes, and then turned her head toward Counselor Lannoy.
"They're waiting outside."
Counselor Lannoy nodded in response, then turned back to Karis.
"I regret to say this, sir, but you are under arrest for the crime of heresy in the Kingdom of Delanos. I would like to ask you to cooperate. If you do so, we will provide you with one of our best legal advisors to attempt to convince them to lower your sentence."
"In Delanos? For heresy?"
Karis barked a laugh.
"What, would they lower the sentence to only taking off half my head?"
The old man winced.
"I believe one of our attorneys would be able to persuade them to limit the punishment to something less than fatal.
Karras rubbed his forehead. I appreciate the thought, but I have no intention of being imprisoned for telling the truth. I'll be leaving now.
He turned back toward the door. The two guards stepped in his way, drawing steel.
Karras raised his hands to display empty palms. Please don't make this difficult. I'll leave peacefully if you let me.
I'm afraid that won't be possible.
Counselor Theus stepped closer to the edge of the platform overlooking the lower area.
But don't worry. You won't have to fight anyone. You won't get the chance.
She pointed a hand at him.
Elias, bind him in the chains of authority.
Shimmering green chains sprung up from the floor, surrounding Karras and enveloping him in an instant. They wrapped around his limbs, seemingly of their own will, and pulled together tightly. Shackles manifested around his wrists. Karras turned his head toward Counselor Theus.
That was a mistake.
He moved his arms apart. The chain connecting the shackles snapped first. The other chains cracked apart as he moved, stepping closer to the door.
Stop him!
Theus yelled. The first guard moved quickly, swinging his sword in a downward arc. Karras caught the blade in his right hand, completely arresting the weapon's movement. With a twitch of his hand to the side, the sword blade snapped. Karras discarded the broken half of the sword blade in his hand while sidestepping a sword swing from the second guard, then spun to deflect a blast of lightning from a third attacker. My mother. She'd floated down from the top floor onto the floor of the council chamber below.
A lightning sorcerer? That's more interesting, at least.
Karras smirked.
Mother. Oh, no.
It occurred to me in the following moments that I didn't know exactly when this gem memory was from, and I hadn't heard from my mother in months. Mother didn't look as scared as I felt, though. In fact, she was grinning, too. She snapped her fingers, a crackling aura of lightning manifesting all around her.
You're quick, she remarked. But unarmed? I don't think you're much of a threat.
Karras raised a single hand, shaking it in a conciliatory gesture.
You're right.
He kicked the now unarmed guard that tried to grab him from behind, sending the man tumbling into a nearby wall.
Hold that thought.
The other guard opted for a lunge. Karras sidestepped it without looking, spun and grabbed the guard's arm. Another smooth motion and Karras plucked the sword from the guard's hand, seemingly without effort. As the guard stumbled backward, Karras advanced, twisting the weapon to use the flat of the blade. A wall of ice appeared between them before he could take a swing. Karras turned just in time to deflect a hail of icy shards, nearly identical to the spell that Sarah had used against Teft, but larger and more numerous. His stolen blade flashed crimson as he cut the chunks of ice apart, then flared with silvery light as he hopped atop the ice wall and looked at the source. Counselor Theus was enveloped in an aura of frost, still sending more icy shards in Karras's direction. He opened his free hand, running it across the blade of the sword. Fire trailed where his hand passed, igniting the edges of the weapon. He swung the sword in an arc, launching a burning crescent at Counselor Theus, but a blast of lightning from my mother smashed into the crescent, detonating the two attacks in the air. Karras glanced back down at my mother, then back to Counselor Theus.
Two sorcerers? You certainly prepared for me.
Counselor Lanoy cracked his knuckles.
Three, actually.
He traced a pattern in the air, leaving a glowing blue rune shimmering in front of him.
I would advise you again to surrender.
The masked swordsman grinned.
Oh, you misunderstood me. I wasn't complaining. I'm just starting to get interested. A pity.
Counselor Lanoy pressed his hand into the glimmering pattern. It split apart into a series of spheres of mana that spread out and then rapidly converged on Karras's location. The swordsman spun to slice the first one with his blade, but it detonated before he managed to strike it, creating a rippling shockwave of force that sent Karras stumbling backward along the icy wall, right into more of the converging projectiles. A dozen more blasts of blue-white light erupted as the spheres burst around Karras, blinding me for an instant with their intensity. When my vision cleared, Karras was still standing. His tunic was shredded and blood-stained, a hint of blood dripping from his lips. Burn marks were visible on his back. He was grinning more brightly than ever,
The aura around him flickered, then intensified, turning a silvery hue. Karras vanished, reappearing next to Counselor Lannoy and driving a fist into the older man's gut. A shimmer of silver and green erupted on the impact. The counselor folded around the punch, collapsing to the floor in an instant.
"Elias, Warden of the Adamantine Wall, I summon you!"
Counselor Theus shimmered bright green, a shimmering shroud of runes surrounding her as a metallic titan appeared on the floor below. The creature was roughly humanoid, but it must have been 20 feet tall, and it crackled with green energy that matched Counselor Theus's. She summoned a golem, I realized, and a powerful one at that.
"Grab him, Elias!"
The golem was surprisingly fast for its size, reaching out with a massive hand to grab at Karras. He was still faster. His sword shimmered silver. His hand blurred. Metallic fingers clattered to the floor below. A moment later, Karras was running around the circle of the upper level, blindingly fast. He paused in front of me. I raised my hands.
"I'm just here to observe."
Karras's eyes narrowed underneath his mask for a moment, then he grinned and chuckled.
"Fair enough."
He blurred again, appearing in front of Alora. She blasted him with a cone of ice at point-blank range. For a moment, it looked like it had worked. Karras was completely enshrouded in frost. Within, however, I could see a crimson glow beginning to form, and then the ice burst apart. Just in time for the golem's other hand to punch Karras into the wall. For a moment, the room was still. Then, inch by inch, the golem's massive fist began to move backward. Karras was pushing it back with his offhand.
"That," he said, cracking his neck, "actually hurt."
His sword arm twitched. The golem's arm separated into two halves, which Karras pushed apart.
"Elias, I dismiss you,"
Counselor Theus grimaced, waving toward the metallic creature. The golem vanished. She raised a hand again, a crimson aura appearing around her.
"Vaniv, I—"
Karras appeared in front of her, his sword blade glimmering with a silvery aura. He pointed it at her chest.
"That's enough."
Counselor Theus's hands tightened into fists.
"Very well. I concede your victory. I withdraw."
"Good,"
Karras waved his empty hand. "And tell the group from Delanos waiting outside not to bother sending reinforcements unless they have someone more powerful than you are." Theus looked like she was going to say something else, but she was interrupted by a blast of flame annihilating the floor below Karras and enveloping his entire form. My mother had moved to the position just beneath him on the lower level and blasted upward. Since she was on the level below, he had no way to see it coming. Karras hit the floor right in front of her, smoke trailing off his body. He was covered in scorch marks now. She'd obviously hurt him, but the burns weren't nearly enough to account for the intensity of the flames. The shimmering aura around him must have provided him with some degree of protection, like a barrier. He was in a kneeling position when he recovered from the blast. When his eyes reopened, I could see that his irises were silver, bleeding into his sclera. When he stood, dusting himself off, he turned that silvery gaze toward my mother, standing only a few feet away.
"Ah, yes. Sorry to keep you waiting. Shall we?"
He raised his sword and waited. My mother drew the saber at her side.
"Let's."
Karras moved first, but I could tell that only because of the position where their blades locked. His weapon had been stopped by her saber when it was inches from her face. Mother was the one smiling now. Karras frowned.
"Let me reintroduce myself. Laura Liren, Counselor, Elementalist, and perhaps most importantly, Emerald Swordmaster."
Then she kicked him in the chest. Karras took the kick with a grunt, stepping back in surprise and losing his push on her weapon. Mother followed with a series of rapid strokes at chest level, her own movements too fast for me to follow, even with the divination-enhanced vision. Another of her strokes went low, but he kicked it aside, pressing forward with a thrust of his own. Mother batted it aside with her offhand, which was glowing with electricity.
The charge traveled through Karras's weapon and into his arm. He winced, managing to maintain his grip, but barely dodged the follow-up swipe at his gut. It tore another line across his tunic and a crimson trail along his chest. "Curious," Mother mused. "Your shroud isn't working properly."
"I'd love to tell you all about it after you surrender."
Karras swung downward in a cut that should have come nowhere close to hitting her. His blade grew longer mid-swing, forcing my mother to make a split-second dance to her right, where his left fist was heading. She took the punch with a wince and then struck him in the ear with a cupped palm. Karras stepped back, grimacing, and shifted his stance to one I'd never seen. His right arm extended almost completely, the tip pointed toward my mother's chest. It looked almost like an Edrian fencing stance, but I'd never seen one with the sword arm extended so far. The intent of the stance was clear enough. It left little of his body exposed, and his sword was in the way of any further attempts at getting close to him with a fist. My mother stepped back, lowering into a standard defensive saber stance. Then she flicked a finger against the flat of her saber and a voltaic charge traveled along the surface of the blade, flickering back and forth from hilt to tip. As long as that electrical charge was on her blade, she could shock him on any contact between their weapons. I approved of the tactic. It made attrition her ally. It also made me deeply concerned. Such a tactic would only be necessary if she knew she was at a disadvantage. Karras took a step forward, pulling his arm back an inch. Mother moved her guard upward. Karras reset his stance. A test, then. Karras and my mother stood motionless for moments, save for their eyes. They were both searching for weaknesses, finding none. With his focus on my mother, Karras didn't see the injured guard crawling up behind him. With a nod to my mother, the guard grabbed Karras around the right leg. Karras startled, turning his head. My mother lunged. The masked swordsman twisted, trying to move out of the way, but the guard's grip held. The blade caught Karras along the ribs, sending a charge of lightning into his chest. He stumbled back a step, finally managing to kick the guard and send the man tumbling across the floor. Mother struck again. Karras caught her blade with his, but her blade was still charged with electricity. The lightning traveled from her weapon into his, searing his skin, but he didn't drop the blade. He pressed back harder. Mother fell back a step, losing her stance for an instant. Karras's blade flashed downward, driving Mother's into the floor below. She pulled, but it was stuck. Mother wasn't done, though. She released her grip on the useless weapon and stepped inside Karras's guard, slamming both hands into Karras's chest. A blast of lightning launched him backward into the nearest wall. Karras stood again. His aura burned brighter. The air around him seemed to tremble as he stretched out his arms, readying his weapon to strike. His blade burned with a flare of silver, bright as a newborn star. Then he smiled and tilted his head downward. "That was the most fun I've had in a while. I hope we'll meet again." Then he turned and swung the burning weapon at the wall behind him, cleanly severing through the stone. With a punch from his other hand, the wall gave way, and then he was rushing out of the room. My mother grit her teeth, taking a step toward the hole where he retreated, but the guard who'd helped her stood back up in her path.
"Counselor Liren, please help me see to the wounded."
Mother's eyes narrowed, considering, and then she nodded. "Of course." I was moving. I knelt next to the old man, Counselor Lannoy, and inspected him, still breathing. Counselor Theus was already approaching as well. She looked exhausted, but uninjured. I turned my head toward Counselor Theus.
"He's alive."
"We were very lucky."
Counselor Theus knelt down at his side.
"No," my voice replied. "He chose to be merciful."
My vision froze after that, shifting in a blinding instant back to my own eyes. I turned the gem over in my hand, trembling as I considered what I'd just seen. Karras was there to meet with Tengen, and they tried to arrest him. It follows that the ambush probably made Karras unhappy with everyone involved. And Tengen has been missing for weeks now. Resh! Did Karras hurt one of the visages?
That would certainly explain why he was imprisoned in the tower, if it was the case. I frowned. And Mother was there. Mother fought against Karis, and she handled herself better than any of the others did. I knew she could fight, but that was pretty impressive. When'd she get a second attunement? That last part didn't really matter. I was glad she'd made it out of there alive, but I'd barely talked to Mother since she'd left. While I certainly felt a pang of fear for her when I'd seen her there, now I was more interested in why she was involved. She clearly knew more about Karis than I did if she was involved in an attempted arrest. I was nowhere near ready to reconcile with my mother after years apart, but this gave me a very good reason to write her a letter. I needed all the information I could get. Dear Mother, it's been too long since we last spoke. Unfortunately, this letter is less about personal matters and more about a pressing concern. I have recently become peripherally involved in a situation regarding a man named Karis Salirian. I understand that you have also been somewhat involved in this matter, and thus I would like to discuss things with you, either by missive or in person at your discretion. In specific, I am seeking any information about his present location and disposition. I hope you will be able to provide me with some insight. I also hope you are well. Corin. I handed the letter off at the courier station, paid them, and headed back to my room to ruminate for a bit. It felt a little cold for the first message I'd sent to my mother in years. Still, she hadn't exactly gone out of her way to see me, so any obligation I felt was tinged with bitterness. When evening came, I dropped the memory crystal off in the spot Jin had indicated. I had more questions than ever about this. Hopefully, my mother would have answers. In the meantime, I did have one more person I could ask. "Professor Orden, can we talk?" Orden frowned at me, pushing a lock of dark hair out of her eyes. "Back so soon?" I closed the door behind me before responding. "I have information to discuss," I said, turning back to her. "Can we speak in a safe location?" She sighed. "Very well." She walked over, placing a hand on my shoulder and muttering the words to her veiled teleport spell. We appeared in that strange, empty white space she'd taken me to before. My stomach still lurched as we teleported, but not quite as badly as last time. Maybe I was starting to acclimate to it a bit. "Well?" Orden folded her arms. "I managed to obtain a bit of information on Karis. He was in a confrontation with members of the House of Lords who attempted to arrest him." Orden gave me an approving nod. "You managed to discover that a bit faster than I expected. Found out from your mother, I assume?" I shook my head, only in the aftermath of making the gesture, realizing that maybe I should have claimed that as my method. Well, too late now. "I obtained and watched a memory crystal of the event." She lifted an eyebrow. "Fascinating. I wonder how you managed such a thing." "Oh, don't tell me and spoil the fun. I'll figure it out." "I appreciate the update, but I knew about that event. Did you discover anything you think was relevant?" "Well, he claimed to be there to meet with Tenjin, but the council stepped in to have him arrested." I thought about that for a moment, then reconsidered. "Or, I should say, a few members of the council. I imagine that couldn't have been everyone." "Quite right." Orden folded her hands in front of her. "The Council of Lords currently has 45 seats. That was a small affair that I believe the adjutant arranged in cooperation with Delanos's authorities." 45 seats? That was more good information for me to keep in mind for the future. "I wasn't quite clear on that. They mentioned something about heresy?" "Karis fled arrest in Delanos after he made a public speech about the visages deceiving the populace about the state of the outside world." "Yeah, that'd definitely count as heresy." "In what way did he claim the people were being deceived?"
"I didn't hear all of it," Orden admitted. "But it had something to do with the tyrant in gold not being as controlling as everyone thinks."
Oh, dear. I'm half surprised that Katashi didn't fly down and smite him on the spot. Professor Orden chuckled.
"Well, it seems it did come to that eventually, didn't it?"
"Or something like that.
We still haven't heard anything about what happened after the fight I witnessed.
Unless you have.
She shook her head.
No, I don't have any news on that subject. I will inform you if I discover anything pertinent, however.
Thank you. One more question, since you were already familiar with the incident I mentioned. Was that before Tenjin stopped showing up to council meetings?
Right before, she confirmed.
If you're thinking that Karis went after Tenjin after he escaped and attacked him, that would be the prevailing hypothesis.
Resh, and I'm the one that let Karis go free. That means I have an obligation to help stop him if I can.
Thank you, Professor. That's all I needed to know. My class the next day was mana manipulation, one of the two classes on my schedule that was only assigned to enchanters. I was still distracted thinking about Karis and worrying about my mother, but the class was interesting enough to help get my mind off of it to some extent. The best part was right at the beginning. Professor Edlin, the same teacher I'd signed my paperwork with right when I came out of the tower, was in charge of the class. She started us out with a simple instruction.
Close your eyes and put your hand over wherever your attunement is located. Now take a deep breath and think about the passage of the mana within your body. If you've ever used a runic item, think about how that mana flows out of you into the object. If not, simply try to picture a flow of energy within your body emanating from your attunement mark.
I followed her instructions, envisioning the familiar sensation of the dueling cane leeching mana out of my hand. I felt a twinge of phantom pain just from remembering the sensation.
Now, say the words, detect aura.
I repeated the phrase.
Open your eyes.
I opened them. I immediately shut them again. Everything had been glowing. It was blinding. I blinked and blinked again, but the auras didn't go away. From the murmurs of excitement and frustration around me, I wasn't the only one experiencing it.
If you're sensing auras now, you've just activated your attunement. Different enchanters sense auras differently. This appears to mostly be tied to the location of the attunement mark, but there is some variation. If you haven't activated your attunement yet, we'll try another method.
She ran through a few more exercises until all of the students indicated that they were able to sense the auras around them. During that time, I gradually acclimated to what I was seeing around me. Brilliant nimbuses of power, shimmering around every student. They varied in intensity from person to person, and each student's aura seemed to emanate from a different spot. Most students had colorless auras, just distortions around them that looked like waves of heat. A few of them had a crimson tinge to that aura. One student's was already completely red. I assumed that meant he'd already hit carnelian level. Impressive, considering we'd just started the school year. Professor Edlund had a shifting, multicolored aura, clearly brighter and broader than those of the students in the room.
Mana. I'm seeing mana.
I chuckled in delight at the thought. Lifting my hand, I could see my own mana, a translucent field that seemed thickest within my right hand. The lack of color made it difficult to discern, but it distorted everything beneath it, like looking at something immersed in water. Of course, my most important mana source was the attunement on my forehead, but I couldn't exactly see that without a mirror. I thought that I could feel it, though. Maybe just a little, like a pool of warmth beneath my skin. I briefly felt a surge of dysphoria at the concept of mana occupying the same space as my brain. Sure, it was supposed to be a normal part of my biology, and I knew that, but it was weird.
Now that you can perceive your mana, you should be able to shift a portion of it to another part of your body. This is the simplest mana manipulation exercise, and one that serves as the foundation for dozens of others. You will need to be able to shift the mana within yourself to learn to shift it out of your body, and thus to empower runes.
I proceeded to spend the next 2 hours trying and failing to complete this utterly basic task. Over the following week, I tried again and again, but I just couldn't get my mana to change. I assumed it was some sort of mental block. I'd heard of people who could alter their heart rate just by thinking about it, for example, and I couldn't do that either. It was just before the next mana manipulation class that I realized I had a way to cheat.
I kept my attunement disabled most of the time. Activating and deactivating it was as simple as closing my eyes and thinking about it. The words detect aura were just a shortcut for tricking our minds into doing what we wanted them to do, and different shortcuts worked better for different people. I didn't need that one. Since it was easy for me to perceive my own aura, I realized that if I wanted to move it on my own, I should try focusing on it while it was being manipulated by something else. Namely, while practicing with my dueling cane. My next two dueling classes didn't actually put me on the stage. They were focused around tactics and technique, with a few other students bearing the brunt of Lord Teft's antics. I did, however, get permission to use a dueling dummy for practicing with my cane. I turned on my attunement before I focused on the rune, activating my dueling cane the same way I had so many times before. This time, I saw it. The essence flowing from my arm into my thumb, which triggered the rune. A second surge of essence from my hand into the body of the cane, then flowing out from the cane in a burst of concussive force. I saw an unfamiliar aura around the dummy before the strike impacted, and then a different aura manifest as the dummy's shield activated, blocking the burst. I tried again, and this time as the cane drew mana out of my hand, I pushed. More mana flowed out of my hand into the cane, charging it with power. The force of ensuing blast tore the weapon right out of my hand. The mana burst missed the dummy entirely, but dissipated harmlessly in the air before it impacted anything. I breathed a sigh of relief, even as my hand twitched in pain. I'd done it. My mana had moved. It took me 2 more days to reproduce the ability to move my mana without the use of my cane, and even then it was much harder. But challenging or not, it worked. And that was enough. Immediately after my next mana manipulation class, which discussed the basics of transferring mana from an outside source from one place to another, I attempted my first enchantment. Or some facsimile thereof, at least. Normally, Lord Teft recharged our protective sigils before the beginning of each dueling class. Studying the sigil, I realized it was more complicated than I had originally expected. It had 3 main runes, each with a different function. 1, it had a persistent aura that detected if it was in close proximity to a person. This seemed to have a range of a few inches, so it could be worn on a garment that was over a layer of armor. 2, it had a 2nd persistent aura for detecting incoming attacks. 3, it would create a barrier around the person it was detecting if an attack was inbound. This made it much more mana efficient than something that just continuously generated a barrier around whoever was wearing it, since maintaining a barrier for a long period of time had a high mana cost. This also meant that the barrier could potentially be circumvented by finding things the detection spell did not classify as an attack. I'd have to study that. I didn't want to hurt the other students, of course. I just figured it would be good to know what tactics potential threats might use against me, since the pin was my only real defensive tool. The 2 detection functions used mental mana, which I was ostensibly specialized in. The 3rd, the shield itself, used simple gray mana, which I also had a lot of. That meant I could, in theory, recharge the item by myself, or, eventually, I could make more on my own. My first several attempts to recharge the sigil ended in failure. The biggest problem was that I couldn't force myself to move my mind's mana, most likely because even the idea of using mana from my brain terrified me. Was I going to permanently damage my brain? Tear away my own memories? Kill myself outright? All of the above were possible if I used up too much of my mental mana. I knew that, and I knew that other people still use their mental mana all the time without any difficulties. I also knew it would get easier and easier once I got started. I still couldn't do it. I kept thinking back to what happened to my great-grandfather. Alaric Cadence had been the pride of our family. He was a war hero, famous for ending the 6-year war between Velia and Edria in a duel. He was the one who elevated our family from merchants to the noble House of Cadence as a reward for his victory. He was the reason my father and my uncle had become duelists. They'd lived in his shadow, just as I always would, and he had died without recognizing his own son's face. He'd only been 40 years old when it happened. No hero is immune to the costs of war. In Alaric Cadence's case, the price had been subtle at first. He'd laugh about forgetting something simple, like where he'd put a piece of clothing. Absent-mindedness that anyone could easily dismiss. Forgetting a few faces of people he hadn't seen in years, no problem. By the time it was obvious that he was overusing his mental mana, he could barely care for himself. Our family spent every resource at their disposal seeking answers, but it was futile. No damage caused by the overuse of mind mana had ever successfully been repaired. I had never met the man, but I knew his story. I saw it written in the face of my grandfather every time he looked at Alaric's portrait. I saw it in the way my father's hands trembled when he prepared for a duel. It had been my mother who actually told me the tale. Perhaps my father would have told me eventually, or perhaps he was too afraid that his own life would end in the same way. Grandfather remembered me the last time I spoke to him, but I always worried that there would come a time when that would end. The fear that story instilled was a part of me, something bone deep that no level of rational thought could simply dispel. And while I told my mind that I would not let fear break me, I didn't have to. All I had to do was bend, and the fear had won. The fear always won. Ultimately, I ended up recharging the barrier part with gray mana successfully first. It was in that process that I realized that the item didn't have a capacity-limiting rune like the ones we'd learned about in my permanent enchanting class. That meant, in theory, that I could overcharge it until it exploded. That'd be bad. Fortunately, I was able to compare the strength of the aura to what it had been when Teft had filled it up prior to my last class and easily get it into a similar range. I didn't know what the tolerance was for error on refilling the item, but I figured it wasn't something where a tiny bit of extra mana would make it burst and annihilate me. I still erred on the side of too little mana, though. After a day of rest, which was more than I strictly needed, I tried converting some of my gray mana in my right hand into mental mana to use for recharging the other functions. That would have circumvented my fear of using the mental mana directly from my brain. I failed at that for the rest of the week. During that time, I got a little more used to talking to Sarah and Patrick again. Roland remained taciturn, but I saw him from time to time as well. I didn't see much of Jin. In the following week, I hoped to get a little more insight into my mana conversion problem in my attunement class. Magic theory class talked a lot about the ideas behind attunements, but the attunement class was where we learned more about the exercises and practical applications of all attunements. Converting mana from one type to another was something every attuned would have to do eventually, so it was something we'd be practicing in there. Unfortunately, that particular class ended up covering a lot of the same information that Professor Orden had about attunement levels, like carnelian, sunstone, etc. This time, it was in the context of focusing on how we could work our way from rank E quartz to at least rank B quartz before the end of the year. Interestingly, the attunements teacher also confirmed something Orden had implied. People with multiple attunements could have completely different levels with them. Orden had called herself a carnelian-level enchanter, but she was conceivably much more powerful at illusions or summoning or whatever other strange attunements she had. The power of an attunement corresponded to the amount of mana in that specific part of the body, so I'd have to train my mental mana in order to make my attunement stronger. That was going to be a problem. The school only expects us to hit rank B in quartz by the end of the year, but I need to get all the way to carnelian in a few months. That's going to be a lot harder. Rank B in quartz only requires about 25 mana, which seems very doable. Getting to carnelian, however, requires about 60 mana. I haven't checked since that first time, but I'm still probably around 18. I've got a long way to go.
Professor Conway was a rust-bearded gentleman in a tweed suit who seemed entirely engaged with his own lesson. Once the material he was covering started to become less familiar, I refocused my attention to it.
The term spell can be misleading, as it implies the use of words. However, only long-marked attuned make judicious use of words for their magic. When a guardian focuses their shroud around their hand before punching someone, the guardian is using mana, and thus we classify that as a spell.
He was surprisingly animated despite the mundane subject. He emphasized each major term like spell and provided accompanying gesticulations.
Some academic institutions outside of Valia have begun to use different terminology for attunement-based abilities activated through other means. Others have simply replaced the word spells with something more general in nature. For example, Edrians use a local word that translates to techniques.
Several students made rude noises, and he paused to regain silence. Once he had it, he continued as though nothing had happened.
Now you're probably wondering what each of these attunements is capable of, hmm?
There was a murmur of approval from the class at what I'd interpreted as a rhetorical question.
Excellent, excellent. In today's class, we'll cover the basics of each of the local attunements. In subsequent classes, we'll get into more details on the capabilities of each, as well as synergies with other attunements. We'll also have an overview of the attunements of other regions, but you'll have to wait for next year for details on those.
The professor walked over to the chalkboard at the back of the classroom and began to draw. Aside from Professor Edlin in my mana manipulation class, he was the only professor I'd seen use chalk. I was sitting pretty close to the front, but it still took me a second to recognize what Professor Conway was drawing, the guardian attunement symbol. He finished it a moment later, keeping the chalk in hand.
I'll start with one of the most controversial, the guardian. In old times, we didn't think the guardian had magical abilities at all, and the name is a legacy of that misconception. At first, we believed it merely passively enhanced the resilience of the guardian, thus the name.
He fell into a low martial arts pose of some kind, his chalk hand extended forward.
As years passed, guardians began to demonstrate seemingly magical abilities through martial arts. We understand these abilities far better now, and they are a way of manipulating mana as surely as hurling a bolt of fire would be for an elementalist.
A visible aura appeared around the professor as a swirling field of yellow-orange. Normally, I couldn't see auras unless my attunement was active, so I assumed he was doing it deliberately. The professor continued his explanation.
The guardian accomplishes this by manipulating their shroud, a field of mana that surrounds their body. Normally, the shroud is equally distributed and serves primarily as a defensive field, but it can be focused on a certain part of the body, either to defend...
Conway flicked the chalk forward and it ignited in a burst of flame, vanishing a moment thereafter.
Or to strike... A quartz guardian will learn to use this to punch, kick, and block more effectively. At higher attunement levels, guardians learn to extend their shroud to objects or to push a specific type of mana through their shroud, just as I did a moment ago.
He stretched, resuming a normal posture, and his aura faded.
Even at advanced levels, guardians always focus on manipulating their shrouds. Thus, guardians often learn traditional martial arts forms in addition to the techniques they study to focus their mana.
That made sense. I was curious if specific motions triggered specific spells, or if it was more about just focusing their mind. I'd have to ask about that later if it wasn't addressed directly. He clasped his hands in front of him.
All attuned develop shrouds once they reach carnelian status, but no other local attunement can manipulate a shroud to the same degree. There are, however, some foreign attunements, such as the Legionnaire.
He turned his head, looking distracted.
I heard it a second later. A bell. No, bells. More and more of them, growing louder as the bells nearer to us began to chime. Some students immediately began to stand. Conway unclasped his hands and held one out to forestall chaos.
"Students!